All the while his hands spread farther and farther apart, creating a widening ring. Did he mean he wanted her to change her mind? Like the center of the ring was her original idea, but he would broaden the idea and make her see it differently? Kind of a complicated thought process, but not impossible. She let her own hands act out the sequence on the table, Lul watching her, willing her to understand. It was harder to think with that low rolling thrum coming from the two newcomers, to say nothing of the high jittery twinges from their entourage. Her hand slid across the table, and she felt something wet clinging to her hand. Pulling up, she saw a strand of mogi fiber clinging to the underside of her pinky. She peeled the wet string off, preparing to flick it away, and thought about the mogi, the way it unwrapped. She could see Lul's thick fingers peeling back the dried husks to get to the fresh green leaves within. Several of the foods she'd seen him eat were handled that way, the old on the outside, the new within. Time. She didn't know how she knew it, but she knew it, and she knew Lul could see it in her face. He wasn't telling her options, he was telling her a sequence. First, in the middle, the earthers didn't move. Then Meg would move. Then Meg would move the earthers, and then the earthers didn't move again? She knew she was right up on it, but couldn't quite grab it. Meg move earthers?
Meg move a little.
He widened his hands.
Meg move. Earthers.
She heard his teeth grind in frustration, trying to find the words. When the woman beside him interrupted, Lul did shout, slamming his fists on either side of the light screen, making the woman squeak, the man jump, and the soldiers shift their batons. One of the cameras purred. Meg gave Lul a chance to compose himself, keeping her eyes on him and ignoring the staring duo on one side of her and the encroaching camera on the other. This was between her and Lul, and she made sure every inch of her body language said so. Lul stared into her eyes, and she heard the pitch of his throat hum level out. They sat that way for several minutes, just looking at each other. Meg had to fight back a smile. The low, rolling hum of the two newcomers grew higher, less in sync with each other the longer she and Lul kept up their silent bond. Whoever they were, Ba and Addo did not like being left out. Finally, the woman couldn't sit still any longer. She reached into her pocket and slammed down a handful of small, thick, round discs. She and her partner talked in tandem to Lul, sliding the discs around on the tabletop until a cluster of five sat in the center. She swept the other discs off the table and back into her pocket, then jabbed at the air over the screen, saying yes. Lul reached for the discs, but she pushed his hand away, her voice getting sharper until Lul surrendered. The woman looked up at Meg and smiled that very big smile again. Meg! Her voice boomed out so loudly Meg couldn't help but flinch. No. Meg held her hands over the microphone, then put them over her own ears. Whatever this woman had to say, she was going to have to learn to say it more quietly. Lul spoke up again, again making the down gesture with his hands. Just as the woman took a breath to start again, Lul cut her off with another short comment and the too broad smile disappeared. Meg could see what looked a lot like a smirk on Lul's face as he sat back. Meg! She started again, her voice softer, her face in a more natural expression. Ba. Ba, yes. Now at least she knew which one was which. She spoke some more, the translation program humming into action trying to capture her words, and once more Lul spoke in low tones to her. Now Ba's teeth ground in frustration as she struggled to figure out this broken way of speech. She pointed to the five discs. Earthers. She waved her hand over the discs. Earthers. A quick glance at a silent Lul and Meg shrugged. Okay. Ba pulled one disc away. Meg. Okay, yes. Meg tapped the disc. Meg. Earthers no move. Meg, move. Boss slid the disc a few inches away. Meg, move, little. Talk cameras. Meg, move, earthers. She slid the lone disc back to the cluster. Oh! Meg could have smacked her head against the table. It was so simple, and yet she and Lul had become so accustomed to talking things out, going on their guts and sheer will, that it hadn't even occurred to her to make a simple visual association. They wanted her to go talk to the press, and then she would return to the camp. Duh. She reached out and grabbed the disc, speaking directly to Lul. Meg moves away to talk to cameras, and then Meg moves back to earthers. Earthers no move. Talk this. She needed Lul to say this in Didetto so the translation program could fill in the vocabulary gaps. It seemed like it was always the little words that hung up translations, pronouns and conjunctions that seemed so small and yet did so much heavy lifting in conversation. Lul spoke, and the program lit up and repeated his words back to him. He tapped his knuckles together.
Yes.
Yes. Meg wanted to smile at the breakthrough, but she hated that it had come from Ba and not from her, Lul. Especially since the solution to the misunderstanding was so simple. Yes. Ba and Addo spoke together too loudly, their teeth showing brown and thick. Meg, move. Talk cameras. They rose in perfect unison, gesturing for her to follow them. Okay, Meg said, rising. Meg, Lul, talk cameras.
No.
Lul didn't move, and Meg sat back down.
Meg Bado talk cameras.
No. Meg Lul.
No.
Addo's tone was sharp.
Bado. Bado. No Lul.
Lul wouldn't look up at her, so Meg dropped down beneath the table, scrabbled around in the dirt, and sat back up with a rock she held up before her. Lul. He dipped his chin, not understanding what she meant. She pointed to the discs. Earthers. Then held up the rock. Lul. He huffed a sound that told her he was following her now. She set the rock next to the discs and pulled one disc away. Meg move and then move back. Lul no move.
No.
He looked down at the table.
Lul move. Bado no move.
Bado and their entourage started chattering again, and Meg ignored them. Instead, she jabbed the question mark repeatedly. Ba's hand clamped down hard on Lul's shoulder, and he spoke in low tones to her, obviously explaining the confusion. Addo smiled at Meg, holding his hands over the discs.
Bado no move. Lul move.
He took the rock from her and threw it over the back of the booth.
Bado Meg. Bado earthers.
Meg rose slowly from her seat, leaning across the table to come very close to Addo's wide, hairy face. She leaned over far enough that she could smell his breath. His smile stayed very wide, but his eyes twitched as she drew close. When she could hear the hitch in his hum, she spoke loudly enough for him to hear. Bite me. She knew he couldn't understand her. At least he couldn't understand the words, but she thought his instincts would have to be pretty dull not to glean her meaning. He ground his teeth.
Meg talk cameras. Lul move.
No. Meg felt a stream of profanity ready to leave her mouth when she heard Prater shouting those very words to the far left of the field. The team of engineers she'd been working with at one of the ship's landing legs crouched and shifted as another dark-clad team pushed its way through. It seemed Lul wasn't the only one being replaced.
What the hell is this?
Prater waved a wrench at a thick Didetto woman who was unlatching a metal box in the middle of Prater's work area.
Get out of here.
Meg switched on her comms. Are they pushing your team out? Jefferson switched his comm on mid-argument.
Isn't going to work. Put it down. Meg, how do I say put it down?
All around the field, the number of work teams had more than doubled, the usual Didetto personnel being pushed aside by well-orchestrated teams in heavier, darker work clothes. She heard Cho protesting over the rising tones of the Effins as another bulkier testing lab was rolled into his area. Wagner rose from the table where he had been working with a computer team, closing his light screen when the dark-clad group crowded in.
Good idea. Meg spoke low in the comms. Everyone, screens closed. Shut them down.
A grumble of surprise and protest rose from the worksite as all five light screens disappeared.
Tools down. Stand up and back away.
She moved her mouth as little as possible, knowing the only Didetto that could hear her was Lul with his earpiece. To the rest of the group assembled, especially the newcomers, the sudden synchronicity would be unnerving. Batto and crew barked rough words at Lul, at each other, and at the crews on site. The original team stood around uncertain, clearly getting orders to move and yet sensing tension. Meg activated the audio command for the translator.
Lul need want move?
Need want had been an important breakthrough concept, especially when the discussion of food and water had arisen.
Lul.
She jabbed her finger at him where he sat, sunk low in his seat.
No ba, no addo. Lul need want move?
Ba and addo, batto presumably, shouted loud and convoluted phrases the translator caught, picking out yes and need want. But Meg didn't care what batto needed or wanted. She leaned in close to his face and whispered,
No batto. Lul. Lul need want move?
Lul's voice was gravelly and low.
No. Batto need want Lul move.
She leaned down farther so he had to look in her eyes.
Fuck batto.
The word itself didn't translate, but the meaning certainly did. Lul sighed and Meg straightened up, turning off the translator comm, leaving only the crew comms active.
Everyone on three, step away from your worksite and meet in the middle at the captain's shelter. Small, slow, controlled movements. You know the drill. One, two, three.
Meg stepped out of the confines of the booth, not deigning to look left or right, and moved with small, precise steps toward the center of the field. One of Batto's security guards made a move to step in front of her, but she froze him with an imperious glare. Eyes front once more, she made her way to join her crew, who matched her calm, steady strides. Wagner put his hands on his hips, a furrow of frustration between his brows.
Anyone want to guess what the hell is going on here?
They want me to talk to the press.
And so what?
Jefferson rolled a sample case around in his palm.
You talk to the news and the goon squad rolls in? Who are these people?
Maybe whoever is in charge wants their team in place when the cameras are rolling. Maybe they've just decided to replace our crews.
Meg struggled to keep her hands from flailing. She knew all eyes were on the five of them, and she wanted to create the illusion of calm. That grew harder and harder as she thought of Lul being forced out.
I don't know about you guys. Maybe you want new teams. Maybe it's the more the merrier, but I for one do not want Lul replaced, especially with the gravel-tooth duo they're throwing at me. And Lul doesn't want to go, either.
Wagner sighed, shaking his head.
Do we have a choice? Could this be some sort of conscription thing? Their work laws? Maybe they're legally only allowed to work so many days without a break.
Come on, Jefferson said.
They don't sleep. Have you gotten the impression from anyone you've been working with that they want a break? They practically fall apart every time we have to stop to sleep. So what do we do?
Cho asked, looking around the group.
I'll tell you what we do,
Jefferson said with a grin.
My daddy was a titanium miner on Galen, and I was a pro football player. Trust me when I say I know the power of a strike.
Prater's eyes grew wide.
You mean just stop working? Stop everything?
I'm with Jefferson. Meg said.
We stop interacting in every way until we're sure our work crews are allowed to stay.
Do we really want to create an incident?
Wagner asked.
It's more than just personal preferences,
Cho said, although Meg knew how fond of the Effins he'd become.
Meg's been breaking her back building the language, but each one of us has made our own sort of, I don't know, pidgin language with our crews, haven't we? Haven't we all found a rhythm, even without words, to make ourselves understood? We get all new teams and we're right back to square one. We're right back to making the same mistakes and committing the same offenses as we did in the beginning. Oh, and for the record,
he shrugged, shoving his hands deep in his pockets.
You know that dark spot of skin underneath their jaws, where the sound comes from? Don't touch that. It's sort of the equivalent of sliding your hand between their legs. Found that out the hard way.
Prater laughed.
That would explain why Kick, Keck, whatever his name is, has become so fond of me.
She kicked at the dirt with her toe.
He drives me crazy. He stripped 5 valves in 2 days, and he's like a wrecking ball, but he's my wrecking ball, you know?
They looked from one to the other, each shrugging and nodding. Meg knew that she wasn't alone in the bond she'd formed with Lul. This far from home, this much pressure on a mission, this type of isolation couldn't help but make each of them struggle to reach out. Even a grinder like Prater, who claimed to be so callous, had clearly been affected by her team. After several minutes of silence, the captain nodded.
It's decided, then. We keep our original crews or we shut them out. If we have to, we leave. There's no avoiding the fact that if we cave on this, if we start giving ground to their authority, we're going to lose our control over the camp, our safety, and our privacy. Meg, any ideas how to handle this?
I do, sir. I get the feeling the two at my booth are kind of important. She tipped her head toward Batto. They have the biggest entourage. Let's move as a group toward them. They turned on her cue and walked slowly toward the pair of booths where Batto, Lul, and the crew stood waiting. Lul pressed his fists into the front of his hips, a sign Meg recognized as anxiety. Ba and Addo straightened up as the Earthers approached, smiles wide, their thrums rolling low and in sync. The Earthers stopped in a straight line 3 feet from the crew. The cameras purred, catching the encounter from several angles, and Batto stepped forward together, Addo holding out his hand to block Lul from stepping forward as well. Meg took a deep breath to control her temper before taking another step out in front of the Earthers. She pointed at Addo, looking at the Earthers. Addo! She spoke loudly so that Didetto could hear her. Her 4 crewmates repeated the word, nodding at the man. Then she pointed at the woman. Ba. Again they repeated the name and the Didetto duo smiled large. Then Meg turned to Addo and tapped her own chest. Meg.
Yes,
Addo shouted through a smile aimed at the cameras. Then she pointed at Cho and said nothing. Addo blinked at her, not understanding. She tapped Cho's chest and tilted her head. She tapped her own chest. Meg. Then tapped Cho. Addo looked to his partner first and then to Lul. Neither said anything. Meg moved down to Wagner, tapping his chest and arching an eyebrow at Addo. When still nothing came, she moved to Jefferson and then Prater, all to silence. No? She asked Addo. She turned to Ba, whose smile dimmed. Meg got the feeling Ba was the smarter of the duo. Meg started from the top, pointing as she went. Addo. Ba. Meg. When she pointed to Cho, she tipped her head and waited. Ba's hum hitched as she barked out what sounded like a command to Lul, who remained silent. One after another, she pointed to the Earthers, who stood as still as stones, waiting to hear their names. No? Meg asked again. She made a little huff of disapproval and walked slowly until she stood directly in front of Lul. She had to struggle not to grin as he raised his eyes to her. Lul, she said, loving the way the flush rose around the edges of his face. She repeated the list of names. But this time, when she pointed to Cho, she didn't have to wait.
Cho,
Lul said, his voice steady as she moved on.
Agnar, Chefson, Praetor.
Meg turned toward her fellow Earthers, who made a point of glancing up and down the line at each other. After a moment, Wagner shrugged.
Close enough.
Indeed. Meg smiled and turned back to the Didetto.
Lul no move.
When Ba and Addo started shouting protests, she held up her hand directly in Addo's face, silencing them both.
Bado move. Meg Lul talk. Lul no move.
She stepped back in line with the Earthers.
Lul no move.
Cho spoke next.
Effin no move.
Wagner.
Olam no move.
Jefferson.
Ben no, no move.
Praetor.
Kick no move.
Nobody moved. Meg could hear teeth grinding and pitches rising and falling as the simple statements sank in. Addo broke the silence, stomping up to Meg and letting loose a torrent of words loudly enough to blow the hair away from her face. Meg didn't flinch. She let him talk and yell, never looking away from his eyes. When he finished, she said simply,
"No."
On her whispered cue, the five Earthers turned on their heels and, as one, sank cross-legged to the ground, their backs to the stunned Didetto.
Chapter 10 Lul.
"You want to tell us what the hell is going on here, Pell?"
Ba squeezed his arm, her breath unpleasantly sweet as it blew across his face. She was the first to break the long, stunned silence after the Earthers' remarkable standoff. Nobody moved. Even the camera operators froze when the five aliens turned and folded down onto their legs in that bizarre way of theirs. Of course, to the contact crews, the teams who had been working face-to-face with the Earthers since their landing, the flexibility and agility weren't so shocking anymore. And once he'd been fitted for the earpiece, Lul now understood how they pulled off that eerie, synchronized movement. But even with that, the effect of the movement and the sight of those slender backs sitting perfectly still amazed him. He could only imagine the effect it had on the newcomers. True to what he'd learned of the reporters, however, Bado reacted with a distinct lack of wonder and huge dose of umbrage. It didn't seem to matter that a team of space-traveling aliens had confronted them. All that seemed to matter was that someone had dared to defy them, block them, and turn them away. And that those someones had chosen lower-level work crews over the vaunted presence of the world-famous Bado, well, that was beyond science fiction, wasn't it?
"I don't know what to tell you, Ba."
Lul shrugged, keeping his voice low in the habit he'd assumed since working with Meg. He didn't really need to. With their backs to the crowd, he knew the sound wouldn't be as loud to the Earthers. But he sort of hoped the altered tone would remind Bado that he was the one who knew how to talk with the aliens. He was the one who knew how to express and explain concepts to them, and most importantly, he was the one Meg had insisted on working with. Meg had more than insisted. The look on her face and the way her voice had dropped into a low, hard tone sent a thrill through Lul he could barely contain. These Earthers seemed so frail in so many ways, their limbs fragile and their voices high and breathy. But when she'd leaned into Addo and held that bony palm in his face, there had been no mistaking the power radiating from her. It was almost ferocity. And after the weeks roaming freely through the workfield, Lul had gotten used to the loose expressiveness of the Earthers, their reed-like body movements and wide, liquid eyes. To see them lock up like they had and stand as one rigid, unmovable force before Bado and the administration's work teams, that they had come together like that because of the lower-ranking work crews. Lul really wasn't lying to Ba. He didn't have the words.
"You tell them to stop doing that."
She waved a thick hand at the backs of the Earthers. Lul saw the black bands tattooed on her fingers, another pretentious status symbol, like the black overshirts.
"You tell them they're not running this show, and if we want them to move or stay or serve us up a mogi ketchup pizza, they're going to get their bony legs moving, do you hear me?"
She grabbed his arm tighter. You tell them that. Lul looked her in the eye.
You tell them.
And so, after much posturing and bluffing and rationalizing the standoff as a win-win for everyone, Lul still couldn't follow that logic, but that was hardly the issue. The original work crews were allowed to remain on site. It had taken almost a full shift to come to the final terms, throughout which the Urfers remained perfectly still. Lul could see sweat trickling down the sides of their faces, and he knew they had to be wanting water. But when he stepped into Meg's line of sight, she had only looked at him and smiled. Note for the archives, Lul thought. The Urfers were stubborn. The work crews had assembled around the argument site. The generals had stepped in, insisting that the original crews and the official black-clad crews stand on opposite sides of the Urfers. Not surprising, the original crews chose to stand in front of the unmoving Urfers, crouching low and probably sharing similar glances with their respective Urfer. The final arrangement declared that the original crews would continue to perform the bulk of the duties, and the official crews would stand by and oversee in an official capacity. A badly hidden ripple of laughter had moved through the crews at that piece of bureaucratic candy speak. General Ada clapped his hand on Lul's shoulder and told him to break the news to the Urfers. Crouching in front of Meg, Lul knocked his knuckles together, resisting the urge to grin.
Lul, no move.
Down the line, the crews responded in kind, each Urfer face loosening into a smile. When each team had reported their status, Lul leaned in closer.
Okay.
Meg's little pink tongue slipped across her lips.
Okay.
With muffled sounds of discomfort, the Urfers rose to their feet, unfolding their legs and twisting their backs. Long fingers brushed dirt off of flat backsides, and slender shoulder carriages rose and fell as they swung their arms back and forth. They did all of this with their backs still to the official crews, who couldn't see the wide smiles each Urfer shared with their Didetto crew. The stiffness of the long standoff worked out of their muscles. Meg slammed her flat palms together, making that sharp snapping sound that always startled Lul when she did it.
Okay, Lul.
She bobbed her head and turned to face the generals, Batto, and the cameras.
Meg, Lul, move. Top cameras. Lul? Effin Cho top camera?
It shouldn't have surprised him, but Meg and Cho seemed the most relaxed at the press conference. They probably didn't know that over a billion people were watching them all over the planet, their every utterance being translated into dozens of languages. Or maybe they did, and that fact paled in comparison to the fact that they'd flown billions of miles through space in a spaceship. All things considered, that fact made a press conference a pretty small affair. Only Lul hadn't flown anywhere. Sure, he'd bonded with an alien and stood up to the Kartar administration, but the crowd, the purr of the cameras, and the mountain of microphones pointed at him conspired to entirely unnerve him as the five of them took their places at the press table. A special platform had been constructed at the edge of the barrier zone, a long, deep awning set up with industrial filters to correct the shifting colors of sunlight for maximum clarity. The microphones clung to the edge of the long table, and Lul noticed that at the front of the table, where an official banner would usually hang, the area was open. The press wanted to see as much of the Urfers as they could, including the way their long legs had to bend and fold to get comfortable on the portable chairs. Meg and Cho seemed perfectly at ease as the event started, looking calmly into the cameras that passed before them, even laughing under their breath as Batto took center stage and held forth at some length. He didn't know how much they could understand of their speech, but he thought they could read their self-aggrandizing posture. Every once in a while, Meg would shift in her seat, her thin elbow brushing against his arm. He pretty much relied on those touches to keep himself from bolting off the platform. This wasn't just some local news story on a turbine failure or missing livestock. This was the world media. The entire world. Every single person who had access to television was probably watching this live wherever they were. He tried to tell himself that all eyes would be on Meg and Cho. His certainly were. But when she turned to smile at him, her eyes crinkling around the edges. He realized that at that particular moment, all eyes were on him, including the dozens of cameras pointed his way. Batto had just introduced him, and now they expected him to speak. Mr. Pell? Ba and Addo smiled at him, and he couldn't be sure who spoke. Then he heard Meg's voice soft in his earpiece.
Lul is okay.
And he felt the tension drain from his neck.
Hello, everyone.
The technicians had told him not to lean too far forward into the microphones, an unnecessary warning since he felt like he was going to fall backward in his chair trying to escape their puffy points.
Thank you for being here today. My name is Lul Pell, and...
Meg's elbow brushed against him, and he took a deep breath.
I'd like to introduce you to my friends Meg and Cho.
Meg smiled at him, those glassy white teeth picking up the light to maximum effect. He wondered what they must look like on the television screens, if people could see just how fragile they looked up close. The Urfers gave the cameras plenty of opportunity to capture the image, turning to face the crowd with the same broad smiles.
I don't know how much exactly you've been told,
Lul said, feeling less nervous seeing Meg so relaxed in the focus of attention.
I assume you've seen pictures of their planet, Earth, and seen at least some of the footage the archivists have taken. To be honest, I'm not really sure what I'm doing up here.
Warm laughter rippled through the crowd. These were seasoned media pros who were all too familiar with official runaround and media speak. They must have been waiting for dozens of shifts, if not several rounds, for this press conference, and probably sympathized.
Can we get a close-up?
An older man with a shield of press badges shouted.
I assume you mean of them. I'm not that photogenic.
More laughter, and he found himself smiling along with Meg.
How are you communicating?
A woman he couldn't see shouted.
We were told they don't speak our language and that this is the one with the tool that's supposed to learn it. They said it has some kind of light screen?
Lua leaned his forearms on the table.
First of all, Meg is a she. Cho is a he. Neither is an it.
He wondered just how little information had been shared and how much of that small amount was accurate. This press conference could deeply affect the world's view of these visitors. He shuddered to think how much damage Batto could have done already. Effin, too, who was seated at the far end of the table next to her work partner, leaned in close enough to the microphone to make it hum. Effin 1 pulled her back as she spoke.
Our biology scans have already determined that genetically we and the Urfers are more similar than different. They are gender-specific, male and female, mammalian of a primate species.
Effin 1 picked up her spiel.
Of course, there are distinctive differences, and we're still running a number of tests to determine nutritional requirements, evolutionary developments, neurological variances. Our work is just beginning.
But how do you communicate?
The reporter asked again.
We've gotten the bulletins and the data reports. We know at least some of what you're learning, but we don't know how. If they don't speak Kartar and you don't speak whatever it is they speak, how are you learning this?
Lul cleared his throat.
That is what Meg and I have been doing. That seems to be her specialty. She has a translation program. We work together, trying to express ideas and words and concepts, and when we realize we're talking about the same thing, she puts it in the program and we're able to talk.
Trying to explain this made Lul realize just how little he understood the process.
Why you?
Someone else shouted.
Excuse me?
Why you?
The crowd peppered him with questions.
Why is she working with you? Aren't you in telemetry?
Why isn't she working with one of the administration's interpreters? Can she understand what we're saying?
Meg squeezed his arm and looked at him, her smile gone.
Lul is okay?
She asked quietly enough to be heard only in the earpiece. Questions kept raining down on him from the reporters assembled, but Lul held up his fist to block them.
Screen okay?
Yes,
he said softly. Then he turned back to the crowd.
Give me just a second. I'll show you the program we're talking about.
He bumped his knuckles as Meg pulled the light screen from her wristband, tilting it up so it stood like a translucent shield between them and the press. The crowd surged, trying to get a better look at the wondrous sight, and Meg ducked her head closer to his.
Lul is okay? Camera talk is okay? What is this talk?
She pointed to the question mark, letting the cameras capture the image lighting up. Lul could see that Cho had opened his screen for the Effens, keeping it flat against the table and thus out of sight of the reporters. Meg had fitted the Effens with earpieces as well, and he could see the flashes of surprise on their faces every time Cho or Meg whispered.
Camera talk is...
He struggled to find a way to explain it. There hadn't been time to teach the word reporters. For Meg and Cho, the men and women who held the cameras were the cameras. Meg must have picked up on the aggressive tone of the questions. It never failed to amaze him how tuned in she was to temperaments and intentions.
Cameras ask why Lul talk Meg.
Why?
Meg tilted her head.
Meg Lul talk. Need want talk.
Yes.
Lul touched the space between the yes and no buttons, a gesture they'd both come to understand as a kind of maybe or but, a gesture of indecision or lack of clarity.
Cameras ask why Lul. Cameras no ask why Meg. Ask why Lul.
Meg's face made a strange change, one of the fine lines of hair over her wide eyes lifting in a way he hadn't seen before. He could hear Cho laugh a short laugh, and the two Urfers conferred in tones soft enough he couldn't make out the words even with the earpiece. When she looked back at him, her expression was very similar to that she had worn after facing down Bado. Before he could say anything, a reporter banged on his chair for attention.
Is it saying something? Can we hear it?
She! The Effens yelled in unison. Lul smiled, happy that distinction irritated the Effens as much as him. It was crucial that the world understand these were people just like them. Okay, maybe not just like them. They were taller and thinner and paler, and had odd smooth skin and weirdly long fingers and arms and legs and necks and really wide wet eyes and glass-like teeth. But he and the Effens had to prove that the more time they spent with these aliens, the less alien they became.
Can she talk? Is that a she beside her? Can either of them talk to us?
Meg talk?
She still spoke only for the earpiece.
Meg talk cameras?
Lul grinned at her.
Okay.
He saw her finger slide up the screen, activating the volume on her speaker patch. He addressed the reporters.
Meg is going to speak, using the program. You're probably going to hear mostly my voice since I'm the one she's been recording, but other words have been added from other members of the crew. It might sound weird at first, but trust me, you get used to it. Oh, and the concepts are still really rough, so don't expect complete sentences or anything.
Lul wouldn't have thought it was possible for this many people to become this quiet. But every person in the crowd grew still. Only the cameras purred as Meg sat up straighter.
Hello. I am...
Meg.
This is... Cho.
A ripple of excitement moved through the crowd, followed quickly by shushing sounds. Cameras closed in, trying to capture the lack of synchronization between how her mouth moved and the sounds emanating from her patch. Thank you.
Didet.
Urfers, thank you. Urfers. She paused, scanning the screen for the correct words. Urfers. Like happy.
Didet.
A reporter stood to ask a question, but Meg continued.
Cameras ask Lul why Meg talk Lul. Yes, this is question?
Lul tapped his knuckles and explained to the crowd.
Cameras are you guys. She heard your question about why me. To tell the truth, I don't know what her answer is going to be.
Another sympathetic wave of laughter poured out. Meg laughed too, the microphones picking up the faintest sound of it, and Lul saw the crowd lean forward even more. Meg talk Lul because Lul talk Meg. She bit her lip, a sign that she was thinking. Lul talk good okay. Her finger hovered between the yes and no buttons. This wasn't exactly what she meant. Lul talk Meg, this is good okay. She looked only at Lul, waving her hands out over the crowd. Lul talk Didet is good okay. Meg talk Lul. Urfers talk Didetto because Lul talk Didet is good okay. Lul is Didet is good okay. Someone shouted for clarification, but Lul ignored them, watching Meg's soft brown eyes staring at him, her smile not as wide, but just for him. Mr. Pell, please. Ba stomped on the stage, demanding his attention. Can you interpret that? Does that even mean anything?
Yeah,
Lul said, bumping his knuckles against the table softly, turning back to the crowd.
She said that she talked to me because I talked to her first. It was sort of an accident. I was just supposed to be holding a microphone for one of the archiving teams, and I sort of forgot myself and stepped forward too far. I came right up on Meg, and the cap of the microphone blew off and hit her.
The crowd made a collective gasp.
I guess it could have been a disaster, but instead she just handed me the cap back and smiled. And she touched me. That's what she means that I told her that we were okay, that she could talk to us, that they all could.
How do you know that?
Addo asked, using his hard-hitting reporter voice.
I didn't hear any of that. How do we know that you're translating accurately?
Trust, I guess.
He answered without thinking, putting his finger on the record button.
Lul trust Meg. Meg trust Lul.
Meg's eyes widened at the new word, her fingers ghosting over the screen. The camera zoomed in even tighter on the image.
Lul talk good okay. Meg good okay. This is trust. Trust.
Meg sped her fingers through a series of commands and then smiled at him. Meg trust Lul. Yes.
Lul trust Meg. Yes.
FN2 spoke up.
The Urfers have been nothing but accommodating and open, making every move to bridge the gap between us. It may not seem like it from where you're sitting, but we have a different perspective, those of us who have been there since the first day they landed.
She smiled a flat smile at Bado. Addo diverted the conversation back to the press.
We have a lot of questions to get through today. You there in the red, what is your question?
For the next half shift, Lul and the Effens answered whatever questions they could about the Urfers. The Effens did most of the talking, especially once someone raised the topic of the aliens' strange stasis patterns. He and the scientists occasionally shared loaded glances when it became apparent that the status reports fed to the media were not 100% accurate. For example, the press kept referring to the Urfers' research mission, as if it had already been determined as the purpose of their visit. The fact was, nobody knew for certain exactly why the Urfers had arrived at all. While all the contact crews felt certain the purpose was benign, nobody knew if the aliens had plans to stay, what those plans might be, or if Didet served only as a stopping point on a longer journey. Olam, the programmer working with their leader, had said they were closing in on linking up the two different computer systems, hopefully unlocking the bewildering array of navigational data the leader had been trying to share. No matter how many different ways Lul tried to ask Meg direct questions about their mission or anything beyond general information of the five visitors, she didn't or wouldn't get the gist of the inquiry and answer off the point. One of the reporters interrupted the Effens while they discussed the Urfer blood clotting. Are there more Urfers coming? Lul leaned forward to try to explain that they hadn't been able to get that concept across yet, when he saw Bado rise as one, their posture tense. A security guard stepped from the ranks, closer to the reporter.
I believe we have made the answer to that question very clear, sir.
Please refer to the data printouts you've been given and keep your questions within the necessary guidelines.
But how do we know they're telling the truth about being the only ones?
The reporter saw the security guard approaching, but didn't back down.
Why would they come this far and send only 5 people? Doesn't it make more sense that there would be a mothership or a fleet following them?
The guard grabbed him under the arm and rocked him off his feet. 2 other guards stepped in to help, but the man kept shouting, even as he was dragged out of the press area.
Don't believe the hype! Think for yourselves! The searcher knows the truth!
A ripple of disbelief and laughter rolled through the crowd. Whatever credibility the reporter might have had among his peers vanished when he revealed he worked with the cult quack, the Searcher. Lul sat back quietly, trying to hide the twist of tension in his gut. As usual, Meg found him out, her eyes searching his as he stared out at the screaming man.
Lul, okay? This is okay?
He looked at her, trying to see her with some detachment. She always tuned in so quickly to what he was feeling when the mood of the room changed. She communicated so many complex ideas and concepts and picked up on so many questions and explanations he put forth. How was it she couldn't grasp the question of other Earthers arriving on Didet? Batto used the reporter's removal as a cue to wrap up the press conference. Meg and Cho rose and stood before the table, giving the reporters the opportunity to take close-up photos. Then the security detail moved in, blocking the steps off the platform from the press, allowing the Earthers, the Effens, and Lul to make their way through the barricade zone back to the landing site. He could hear Meg and Cho talking softly to each other, too softly to be picked up by the translation program. They walked together in that loose, limb-mingling way he'd seen them use before, their long arms and fingers brushing up against each other with no apparent intention other than the comfort of contact. Their conversation seemed light and casual, but when Lul stepped in closer, his shoulder brushing Meg's arm, they both fell silent. Maybe he was being paranoid, but something niggled at him. He kept seeing the impassioned face of the Searcher's reporter being dragged from the scene, and with that, he couldn't help but think of his friend Poe urgently insisting the administration hid the truth from the people. Someone had told the press that it was a fact no more Earthers were coming, something he knew they could not prove, because if Meg couldn't answer the question, he had no doubt the rest of the aliens couldn't, or wouldn't.
Meg.
He stopped her as they reached the edge of the landing site, Cho and the Effens moving back to their lab layouts. The wind had picked up in their absence, and all around the site people were hurrying to tie down tarps and cover tools. A bank of clouds rolled in, filtering the red sun to a dusky rose that brought out a pretty pink shine to Meg's face.
Lul is not okay?
She tilted her head down at him, a line of skin folding along her usually smooth brow.
Cameras talk. Camera talk not okay. Lul is not okay. Why?
He stopped her before she could pull the screen from her wrist. He wanted to look at her face, watch her eyes as they talked.
Camera talk is not okay. The man, the Didetto who...
He gestured, throwing something over his shoulder. Meg tapped her knuckles. She knew who he meant.
That camera asked a question Meg won't answer.
A powerful gust of wind blew sand and rocks through the air, and Meg shut her eyes, twisting her face away from the blast. Lul simply squinted, the sand not bothering him as it seemed to bother her. She wiped dust from the side of her face and blinked back wetness from her eyes as she looked back at him.
Meg talk. Meg answer questions.
Yes.
Lul tried to keep his hands from making fists, not wanting to seem threatening, but not willing to be evaded again.
Meg, talk to Lul. Answer this question. More Earthers?
She tilted her head, that sign of confusion, but this time Lul had been watching carefully, differently. He noticed the smallest delay in her reaction. She waved her hands behind her toward the crew.
Earthers.
No, Meg. Meg not answering Lul. More Urfers?
He leaned in closer.
You know the word more, and you know what I mean. Tell me, are there more Urfers coming?
When she only stared, he pointed to the sky.
More Urfers coming?
She followed his finger, looking up into the sky as if she would find the answer there. A fat raindrop splashed onto her forehead, and when she looked back down at him, she was grinning. She made a breathy sound, not a laugh, but more like a sound of wonder as another drop splashed against her cheek. She tilted her head back so far Lul thought her neck might break. Was there no limit to their flexibility? Holding her long arms straight out from her sides, she turned her palms up as if to catch each raindrop as it struck her. She stepped back from him, turning her body so her arms spun like a strange turban, laughing as the rain peppered down on her face. All around the worksite, he saw the other Urfers reacting to the rain, stepping away from their tools and out from under awnings, turning their faces up to the rain, laughing and calling to each other. The storm moved in quickly, the rain falling in sheets, drops hitting hard enough to rattle the gravel. Soon the site was pocked with puddles. The Didetto crews hurried to the shelters, covering their equipment and huddling together under the awnings, but the Urfers raced into the rain. One by one they peeled the thin fabric off their bodies, tossing the damp garments into heaps around them, their laughter ringing out and disappearing in the bang of the rain on the awnings and cartons.
Chapter 11. Meg.
She'd never been happier to feel raindrops in her entire life. When that first wet splat dripped onto her forehead, she closed her eyes, relief pulsing in her chest. She didn't want to see Lul's face, not the way it looked at her at that moment. And the rain? Oh, the rain. The Didetto had been more than generous with water, keeping two enormous vats filled every day for their drinking and washing. But between the rapid evaporation from the never-ending sunlight and the ingrained sense of rationing all deep space travelers carried with them, none of the Earthers splurged when it came to water. Bathing consisted of sponge baths and dry shampoo. Clothes were rinsed in shallow bowls and air-dried. Even on the ship, especially on the ship, dry showers were the norm. So when the fat, warm raindrops began to drop, harder and faster by the minute, Meg acted without thinking. She saw the same visceral reaction in her crewmates, a skin hunger for water that had them peeling off their shirts and bending backward to feel the rain on their faces. Jefferson had the presence of mind to collect their discarded shirts and throw them in the washing bowl, letting the rain fill it up and soak them. Everyone else wandered blindly, blissfully, opening their mouths to catch the drops until the rain fell hard enough to choke them. Meg saw Cho glance at his kit, and she knew he had to be thinking of checking the falling rain for dangerous contaminants or irritants. She also saw the moment the sensation of wetness washed his worry away. He tipped his face up to the storm, his black hair, grown longer and shaggy after all this time in space, turning glossy and sleek as the water ran through it, pouring down the muscles in his back. The hammering of the rain drowned out all other sounds, and for several minutes, Meg just let herself watch the water move over Cho's body. Before she could act on her body's suggestions for follow-up, a thick clot of mud splattered against her bare stomach.
"Sucker!"
Prater laughed, covered in mud from her hands to her shoulders, long ribbons of it streaking down the pale skin shining behind her black sports bra and gray pants. She scooped up another handful of mud, but before she could launch it, Wagner slipped in behind her and dumped an armload over her head. She screamed and laughed, sucking in mouthfuls of the runny clay and spitting them back out in every direction. The wind shifted, bringing the rain down in hot, blinding sheets into Meg's face, and she just barely had time to jump to avoid Jefferson, who had thrown himself chest forward into a long mud stream sluicing through the worksite. He arched his back, arms thrown out behind him, laughing as he body-surfed the little river, mud spraying out in a wake around him. Cho followed suit, outdoing Jefferson by spinning mid-slide and somehow managing a backward somersault at the end of the long puddle. He came close to sticking the landing, but slipped in the mud and wound up on his butt in the next deep puddle, every inch of him slathered in mud except for a toothy grin. Before she knew it, the five of them were throwing their bodies across the worksite, sometimes surfing on carton panels, sometimes sliding on their butts or their chests, sometimes sliding on each other. The rain poured and poured, flooding the worksite, and after checking to be sure the shelters had maintained their waterproofing, the crew lost themselves in the much-missed sensation of water. Meg couldn't be sure, but it felt as if at least an hour had passed and still the rain pounded down. Her knees and elbows were bleeding from banging against gravel, and she knew she'd have a killer bruise from Prater's last leap onto her back for a piggyback through the long mud channel. Her sides ached from laughing, and every time she bit down, she tasted mud and grit. The light had changed, though. The reddish light from the sun over the sea burning through the thick clouds just enough to tinge the rain orange and pink. Pulling her mostly useless ponytail band from her hair, she ran her fingers through the mud-matted curls, letting the water wash away rocks and sticks, feeling the runny clay drip off her skin and puddle in her soaked shoes. Prater did the same, her blonde hair slowly coming back into sight as she let the rain shower wash over her. Cho came near to Meg, watching her watch him as the thick mud slid down off his bare shoulders and chest, scrubbing at his hair to loosen the packed-in dirt. Soon the five of them fell quiet once more, moving their hands over their skin to clear it of Didetto soil. All of them were scraped and bruised. Jefferson's pants were torn at the knee, and Wagner looked like he might have sprained his wrist, judging by how he held it gingerly. But all of them smiled to each other and to themselves. Slowly the rain let up, the pounding dropping down to a pattering that gave way to a slowing drip from awnings and worksites. Without realizing it, they had formed a loose circle once again, facing each other. Prater spit out a muddy wad into a puddle at her feet, and all of them laughed. With the rain gone, the rumble of machinery could be heard once more, as well as the mumbling and hum of the Didetto work crews watching them from under the awnings. Jefferson pulled a twig from his matted hair.
Good luck explaining this to them, Meg.
Meg unbuckled her wrist screen, wiping away the muddy grit that had collected beneath it. The screen was undamaged. They were designed to go through a lot worse than mud wrestling, but she hesitated to activate the comms. She knew Lul couldn't hear them. None of the Didetto could, and for just a moment longer she savored the privacy. It wouldn't last, she knew. She had to face Lul. Their little mud show wouldn't be enough to distract him from what he'd been trying to say to her earlier. He knew she was lying. She knew she would continue. Lul. The effins sounded like they would break their knuckles, they typed so fast, taking notes on the bizarre behavior of the Urfers. Mamu, the archivist, found a tarp to cover his camera sufficiently to get some footage that would probably never see the light of day, since there was nobody who could think of a way to describe to the public what they were seeing. Seeing it themselves, the crew still couldn't believe it. Kick and his crew thought at first they were trying to kill each other and then trying to kill themselves, but when they kept getting back up, all those white teeth the only thing showing through the masks of mud, the crews had no choice but to accept that for some reason the Urfers were enjoying this. For the first time since arriving on the site, Lul didn't care. He saw Meg laughing even though he couldn't hear her over the pounding of rain on the awning. He saw her grinning and happy, inexplicably throwing herself again and again into the mud in that bizarre flying on the ground way they did. He saw the cuts and tears in her skin and the red blood weeping to the surface and washing away in the downpour, but he didn't feel the urge to rush out and comfort her or bandage her the way the effins so wanted to do for Cho. And when they all stopped one at a time and turned their faces up to let the waning rain wash the mud from their skins,
when they turned their backs on the work crews sheltered beneath the awnings to stand in a circle together, Lul felt farther from Meg than he had since first laying eyes on her. It figured it would rain. Lul hated the rain, always had. He hated it more than the average city dweller, more than even his parents who lived close to the river and always feared the rain's flood. He hated the sound of it and the smell of it and the way it made the light milky and dim. Most of all, he hated the way it drowned out all the sounds around him, making him hear only the sounds in his head. It never failed. It always rained when things went wrong. The administration was lying to the media. The media was lying to the public. By not saying anything when that reporter from the Searcher had been dragged from the press conference, he had lied to the world. He had lied to his friends, Poe and Hark and Reno Dotto. He had lied to his family. He had lied to himself. The worst part of all of that was that he could live with it. He could live with the fact that people lied and fudged the truth and omitted facts for whatever expediency they could rationalize. He didn't expect any better. What hurt the most, what made the rain feel like it was crashing down like gravel on his skull, was that Meg had lied. Meg was still lying, and maybe it was adolescent of him, but he wanted, no, he needed to believe these Urfers. These aliens who had made it all the way across the stars had reached a point in evolution where they didn't need to lie. He wanted them to be better than him, better than the Didetto. He wanted them to have their own version of those old oaths in the Magigan comics he'd read as a boy. The rain tapered off, the drips and pings still splattering mud under the awnings. Crews began uncovering work kits and tools, considering ways to keep the equipment out of the mud, discussing the fear that the Urfers wouldn't help since they clearly had an affection for the gunk. Lul stayed where he sat, at his and Meg's booth. Mamu had piled some lenses and cables on the table, and Lul made no move to clear them. He didn't know how he was going to get through these next few minutes, much less these next days, weeks, and months until whatever the Urfers had planned, whatever secret they were keeping, came to light. He wanted to go home. Security had given the crews permission to access their cell phones, all of them retrieving dozens of panicked messages from loved ones. The administration had sent messages to their families assuring everyone that the work crews were safe and well, working on a classified mission. When the news of the aliens had broken, the majority of Lou's messages were from Poe and Hark. Well, Hark, with Poe yelling in the background. He knew they were excited for him. They thought the way he had thought, that he was on the cutting edge of the greatest event in Didet history. They would have seen him on the press conference. They would have seen him lie. Meg scraped her boot on a board outside the awning, clearing a thick wedge of mud from each sole before wiping her feet on the sheltered grass. She had a towel draped across her shoulders, her skin pale and spotted against the brief black harness-like shirt that covered